We have returned on The Great Outdoors. I'm Jess Myers, along with Dennis Anderson. Manny Hill is running the show like he does from the duck blind every week, and we are thankful.
Great work.
We are thankful to have him as always. Good work, Manny.
The one constant.
So we're going to start with some court news. This week, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia affirmed that the gray wolf in the Great Lakes and Wyoming, which includes Minnesota, should remain on the federal endangered species list. This was a victory for Howling for Wolves, and the director is your title?
I'm the founder.
Okay. Dr. Maureen Hackett is joining us in studio, and good news for you this week.
Yes, thank you for having me. I do say, though, the Wyoming thing was a mistake. They did not include Wyoming.
Okay. So the Great Lakes, the Great Lakes states are the focus.
Yes. We don't want to get in a debate about that. We could also get in a debate, Maureen, and you and I are friendly about this. We're on different sides, but we've known each other now.
Respectful disagreement.
You gave me a wonderful interview in the summer of 2012. Thank you.
It's
where I was yelling at him.
How was that? I was right on top of it then. Nice to see you again. Anyway,
you haven't talked in 5 years. Is that what I'm to imply?
No, we have.
Okay, that's
so it's a DC circuit. I mean, how does it end up there? Is that judge shopping, or how does it end up there?
I don't know. It went through the district court. We were not part of the lawsuit. A lot of people.
Is that the Center for Biodiversity, I suppose?
No, it wasn't them either. It was, I have the list of appellates right here, HSUS, so the Humane Society of the United States.
Bad guys.
And then it says, I had the
usual suspects is what Dennis likes to call them.
I don't have the other list of the plaintiffs.
Well, anyway, a bunch of guys with a bunch of money sued the Fish and Wildlife Service. What I have to say is that how can these Fish and Wildlife Service guys, get it wrong all the time? These judges can't be completely pro-wolf or, illogical. That's the thing that amazes me.
Well, can I back you up to 1978?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Okay. Really? Well, let's go to 1974.
Why not?
The wolf was put on the endangered species list, there was a huge coalition against it, the wolf being listed.
I agree.
Okay, and since that time, that coalition has worked to get the wolf off this endangered species list. And I think you would agree that many of our government agencies have been, I know this sounds a little paranoid, but they have been captured by special interests. And there has been an agenda since 1978 when we came out with our first wolf numbers, which were really a statistical exercise, and we won't go into that, but it just was enough to move the wolf from endangered to threatened, and it wasn't really even meeting the guidelines. We were supposed to have 1,250, and we had 1,235. Bottom line is there's been a push since 1978 to delist the wolf by the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Well, okay, politically, I would say in certain states, Minnesota being one, certainly Alaska as well. Recently, we had an Alaska friend of mine who's a hunter and kind of worked us through what happened to moose populations up there at the hands of wolves. And, that's kind of part of the story, but I'm just trying to back up to the politics of it. In northern Minnesota, we had the cattle men and women, people who have, cattle losses. We have hunters who saw a lot of wolves and so forth. I'm agreeing with your point, but I'm saying that it was a political point and a groundswell of people who, and by the way, and obviously after these many, many hundreds of years, kind of people, you'd almost argue that it's in the genetic makeup of people to not like wolves. Yeah, I think you would agree
with that. Yes, since the start of our country, we basically have wiped out predators, and wolves was definitely on the agenda. And the Cattlemen's Association, at their second annual meeting in 1899, resolved to eliminate all wolves from the state of Colorado, and they did it by 1935.
Yeah, but they did it in a way that we would never allow today.
Well, we allowed it right up until 1965.
With poison.
And airplane shooting and everything else. I mean, there was just this.
Isn't that what Sarah Palin does? She not do that anymore?
Probably, but it was considered patriotic.
The only way we got on top of them was strychnine. I mean, that's the only way.
And let's hope we don't do that.
We won't do that again.
The problem is the wolf is vulnerable out there. You can bait the wolf. If a farmer wanted to kill wolves, we know they could.
Well, they could kill those in that area, perhaps, but they're territorial. They understand. I have a favorite saying that I mutter to my hunting friends when we're out, and it is that, as it turns out, nothing likes to get shot. I mean, you can go on the pheasant opener, as an example, and hunt pheasants on Saturday, and it's maybe, let's just say for argument's sake, it's great, you know, you see some birds and everything. You can go to that same spot or a similar spot the next day and, like, they decided to be cool and hide. You can't find them. And that can be ducks or whatever and deer.
But, you know, with the scent abilities of a wolf, it's so easy to trick them. These guys use these baits that have, like, urine and anal gland secretions chopped up and all these scenty things. They can scent them
okay,
for
but that's
half
not
a
happening
mile
anymore,
away.
So we don't need to waste a lot of time
well,
unless you're talking
USDA
about
USDA Wildlife Services kills wolves
well,
in Minnesota,
do.
And they will continue to kill wolves, and
right.
they kill them by the packs, and
right.
they essentially view it as their duty to kill wolves for, you know, keeping down conflicts when we really now have non-lethal methods that can be employed much more, you know, rigorously. And we have funding now for farmers.
But
we passed a rule or a law, that gives funding to farmers in Minnesota for non-lethal methods mm-hmm. to reimburse them.
So let's go back to the beginning. We have established that wolves have been an issue to civilization, you know, the advancing mm-hmm. of civilization. And obviously, that's, you know, it would be a development that you would expect. You can have wolves interacting with people and with their livestock as they're trying to, hang on, I'm talking about historically.
Yeah.
You know, as they're trying to survive. You can't have that. And you can't have, just like if you read the old journals of Lewis and Clark and others, grizzlies were a big problem. You know, you had your horses and you're trying to get some sleep at night and grizzly's going to eat your horse or chase your horse. You have chaos, right? So you can't have that if you want the people to survive. So, I mean, those are all sort of expected through our history and natural, I think, developments. Now, what you're saying is that in a modern society where we are now, where we have people everywhere, that your argument, I think, is that we need to reserve to the degree possible and preserve the continued existence of top-level predators such as a wolf. Correct?
I would say that.
I mean, you don't want them here in Wayzata, right?
Well, we know that if wolves ended up in Wayzata and were problematic, we know what to do. My problem is going out, you know, we would kill them or we would relocate them. But my problem is we go out in the wild where they live and we kill them purposely for fun. That was the issue.
Well, you're talking about hunting.
That's
now.
The hunting. But the other issue is we've decided that the cattlemen and the big trophy hunters, somehow they get the priority. You know, why would basically when our country started, those two coalitions, like I said, in 1899, that was the coalition to remove predators and in particular the wolves. And they mm-hmm. use this competition for hunting as the way to gin up this wolf hate.
Mm-hmm.
And really what makes it so that the trophy hunter has the right to the game and not the wolf?
Well, you make a good point. But, you know, I think the opposing point would be simply that it's a species that can be managed as other mammals in this case or birds can be managed, that the whole nature of modern wildlife management is that you're taking a surplus, you're always managing to sustain a population, and that's what's going on here. If we were to have a hunting season again, I didn't think that it would reverse or sustain as it did, and that you or pro-wolf people would win again. But there's a whole bunch of things that have to happen now. I mean, first of all, the government has to appeal this decision, whether they will or not. I would imagine politically they will. And as you know, in Congress, there have been many attempts, but unsuccessful, to just override the whole thing and do it by law, right?
Yes. Let's just go back to when the wolf loses protection in Minnesota. When the wolf loses protection in Minnesota, it is not just a hunt. What happens is we have an amazingly generous amount of killing that goes on about the wolf outside the hunt, which was the whole reason for the moratorium on a wolf hunt, because we allow so much killing. We were not even following
the documented killing you're talking about with the Wildlife Services. That's the government.
Not just that. I have an incident report here from February 2013 where an individual farmer saw wolf paw tracks. He reported it. There had not been an incident of predation since 2002, so that was 12 years, 11 years. He was still allowed to bait and kill the wolf. The wolf had done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he could do that. We just preemptively killed a wolf because it wasn't protected.
Right.
And we do that all the time, and people don't know it.
Now, okay. Playing devil's advocate there, would it be preferable to wait until, you know, to see if there's an effect on the livestock?
It would be preferable for that farmer to put some non-lethal methods up, and there were none. Instead, okay. It's like, oh, well, I don't want any trouble, and I don't want to bother with this, and I'm just going to kill
methods?
It. Well, there are a lot of them, but...
One that succeeded and used elsewhere.
What are some examples?
Well, live guard dogs. Guard dogs are very successful. Donkeys, some cattlemen use them with success.
Donkeys, interesting.
Yeah, you know, flattery, they're a little afraid and wears off after maybe several months to a year, but or maybe even a few years, but then you get electrified flattery and that works a little longer. There are some noise and lights and things like that, but from this incident report, he just killed a young wolf on its own.
Let me ask you a question. Let's say there are X.
And they break up packs.
Let me throw a number out, 2,500 wolves, and that's pretty close to what is estimated. You know, let's not argue about it, but pick any number you want. Okay, but let's just say 2,500, okay? And I think I'm making it as simple here as I can because I'm a simple guy, but if there are 2,500 and if modern wildlife managers say the point, if we manage for 2,500 and we have 2,500 today and we have 2,500 10 years from now and 20 years from now, what's wrong with that? They acknowledge that in that there would be X, let's pick another number out of the sky, 400 or 500 wolves killed for sport hunting. But you have the same number, 2,500, in perpetuity. What's wrong with that?
You create chaos in those packs. They might be reproducing at higher rates, which they will if you create...
We have to take a break now, but you know Meech disagrees with that and other wolf people who study wolves, that the chaos in the pack idea is not...
No, that is not disagreed.
Okay, we'll come back.
than maybe Meech.
We'll come back, Maureen, and I'm glad you're here because you do carry your argument well. And we'll talk more about wolves. When we come back, we're also going to talk to...
We're going to talk to our friend Chuck Delaney.
Switch gears a little bit.
We are going to switch gears. It's game fair, almost, which, as I've joked before, is the first sign of winter coming. But
please, fall, at least.
Okay, fall. We're going to talk to Chuck Delaney. Dr. Hackett, stick around. We're going to come back to you because we've got some other questions and some great points that I'm sure you want to make. But right now, we're going to take a break on The Great Outdoors.
The Great Outdoors with Dennis Anderson. Now back to Dennis and Jess Myers on 1500 ESPN.
Out on the water at the break of dawn, I got my GPS and my frog togs on. I got every kind of bait a man might need.
Sounds like the start of a good day on the water if you have every kind of bait a man might need. But you have to have a big boat.
We believe in diversity in this show.
Absolutely we do.
Maureen and I were having a active discussion off the air. But first,
a spirited discussion.
We're going to get back at you.
We appreciate it. But first.
Back to that. We're going to talk to Chuck Delaney out at Game Fair. Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing great, Dennis. How are you?
Yeah, good. Now, whenever I've called you in the past, I won't say months, but weeks, I said, what are you doing? And he said, putting up tents.
Exactly.
How far in advance of the show are those, I don't know, what do you call those, circus tents or whatever they are?
Well, they're just, you know, 20 by 20s, 10 by 10s, 20 by 40s. We got all different sizes according to the people that, you know, what kind of products are going to display. So we got about 220 of them, and they're getting up. We got about 60 left to go, and we'll be ready Monday for some exhibitors to start moving in.
Now, just to be clear, you aren't putting them up personally. You're watching other people put them up, which is...
Exactly. I'm the supervisor. I'm a tent supervisor.
We'll give a little history, you know, because I actually asked a younger person the other day, not about Game Fair, but I was asking a person in football. They were talking about your Vikings, Jess.
My Vikings, yes.
Yes, and somebody said something about Bud Grant, you know, and so this young person said... Well, what I thought was not that young a person says, who's Bud Grant? So time goes on, and people who are younger don't always make these connections.
Sure.
Give a little background. Chuck and Lorelei Delaney live in Anoka. That's where Game Fair is, out on their grounds.
Armstrong Ranch.
Armstrong Ranch Kennels. And the history of that kennel is that Lorelei, Chuck's wife, her father held the first, correct me if I'm wrong here, the first German short hair field trial in Minnesota on those grounds. Is that correct?
No, in the United States.
In the United States, right. It's amazing. And Chuck and Lorelei were twice, I believe, correct me again if I'm wrong, twice the national husband and wife trap shooting champions, the trap shooters. Lorelei,
four times.
Well, but who's counting, Chuck?
I do. that's my only claim.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try to get him 0 for 2. I'm going to try to get a few other things right. I know this, that Lorelei, even as a little girl, went around the country with her dogs and put on at large sports shows, dog demonstration at indoor arenas around the country, correct, Chuck?
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I met her.
That's how you met her. Well, she was older than when you met her, though. Let's at least acknowledge that.
Yeah, yeah.
But and so their history as sporting people, as it were, as trap shooters, and Lorelei is also a champion trap shooter in her own right, and as producers, as Chuck did, producers of shows, of outdoor shows around the country, they've got this long history, and so then they started Game Fair.
1982.
Yep, kind of modeled after the British Game Fair, which only recently concluded over there this summer, Chuck.
From my understanding.
You came back and you said, we could do this, have an outdoor fair, and it's grown and grown and grown. And this year, my understanding from you is it is sold out and packed with exhibitors.
Yeah, it's the biggest exhibitor group that we've ever had. And they're from every place in the United States and Canada, all different kinds of products, basically geared for all out-of-door people. Everybody that comes. Last year, we had a record crowd, and we had 4,000 dogs come.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, and it's this is, like I say, 36th year of the show. And I'm proud of it because of the people that come and participate. And if it wasn't for the participator, the people that come, the show wouldn't be what it is today.
I will say this, though. I was out there last year, Chuck, and you and I talked. And, you know, you talk about record crowds, but it's on a big site. I mean, it's a cool site. You're on a lake, and, you know, it never really felt to me to be that crowded, despite the fact that there are so many people there, you know, because there's so many things to do, different exhibits, different tents, you know, fun stuff to buy for the coming bird season or whatever. So that's one thing that's really nice about it is the way it's set up.
Well, you got to remember this. We're on 80 acres of land. We're not a building that's 200,000 square feet. Or 300,000 square feet, or 400,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. We're on 80 acres of land, and we cover probably about 55 to 60 acres of it with exhibits. And so when you put a lot of people in there, they get pretty well spread out, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's one Saturday, and I can't remember which one, they never stopped from 9 o'clock till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was just lights out.
Now, Chuck, you had to admit, I mean, when you first started this, and you had the idea, or you and Lorelei and talking to other people and that people would come and you could allow them to bring their guns and their dogs. So you have this kind of mix of people, guns, and dogs.
Sure.
And lots of them, you know, that's pretty unique. Most people go to sports shows, they just show up, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a participation event. It's a fun time. We don't have any alcoholic beverages, and we want to keep it a family-oriented business. Our demographics have changed from the start to the finish now. We were an older generation when we started this. People that were you know, in their 50s and 60s would come. But now we're getting the youth, lots of babies, lots of strollers, lots of moms and dads with dogs and guns. And it's really, really changed. And it's the best thing that I've seen that's come along with the youth.
Yeah, that's, in fact, I have to concede that that is a bit of a, you know, a disconnect, because we are always worried about more kids and young people getting into hunting and fishing, hunting probably perhaps more so. You go out to game fair, and you're right, it's a parade of strollers and young people, people in their 20s and 30s. It just doesn't, those losses of that generation, of those generations, isn't reflected out there. And I've often wondered, you know, why that is.
Well, I think it's a family thing. And don't get me wrong when I say we got a beautiful place, and we keep it nice and neat and clean. Everything is done for the public. We're not outrageous in prices. We want people to enjoy themselves, and we love to see those kids. And I get people to come to me and have their young children with them, and they come up to me and they say, "Hello, how are you?" And they say, "My dad brought me here when I was this age."
So you've got a second generation. Yeah. Gamefair.com, www.gamefair.com is the website. August 11th, which is a Friday, 9 a.m., all the fun begins. You run two consecutive weekends, August 11th through the 13th, and then August 18th through the 20th, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, both of those weekends.
Yes, we do.
That's great. Well, it is a sign of the coming season, so I'm sure we'll talk to you again, and I will see you out there, Chuck. Thank you for joining
us. Sounds great. Thank you so much, and look forward to seeing you.
Okay.
Chuck Delaney from Game Fair.
Yeah.
1982. That just blows me away. And I'm sure this wasn't is coincidental, but that was also the first year that WeFest started, which is the other big outdoor event this time of year up in Detroit Lakes if you're a country music fan. A lot of folks heading up there.
A quick story. Chuck and Lorelei and I and my wife and some other people were in, over in England on a dog thing and some years ago. And I set up this shoot. Now, shooting driven bird shoot is very, very expensive. And,
yes,
and
yes.
My going into it, my whole goal was that there would be no charges because these were my friends.
Sure.
And it was in England or Britain. And these, it was their estate and they were the gamekeepers. So they kind of slid us in, right? And so we were positioned around the woods, and you move from place to place, and then these people, you call them beaters, who have spaniels, usually work their way through a wood, and they put, because these large estates, 10,000 acres plus, are cultivated for game, for birds, and they push those birds through the woods, and when they get to the open, they fly, and the way it's set up by the gamekeepers.
So they flush the birds.
That's right,
out.
And okay. They fly over the guns. So, and they're very, very high oftentimes, and that's what they want. They won't shoot at a low bird,
sure,
or even a moderate low bird because it's not sporting. And
well, it's probably not safe either. You know, you
won't. Well, you'd never shoot at an angle, but right. I mean, even a low overhead bird, they won't shoot because no big deal. So I remember taking my little position there and then watching because I could see Chuck going, and Chuck's a good shot, but Lorelei's a real good shot. And then the rest of us were around here. So the poor pheasants who kind of flew over Chuck and Lorelei, I noticed that they sort of got stopped mid-flight. Whereas the other ones, you could almost see, this was long before the cameras that are up on the rotors or up in the sky. But had you seen that, you'd see the birds flying safely past all of us. But then when they went by Chuck and Lorelei, they would fall to the earth. I thought it was so kind of interesting and slash humorous that I stopped shooting for a while and watched.
Fascinating couple. Both of them members of the State Trap Shooting Hall of Fame, I noted this year.
Yeah, oh yeah, they can shoot. You've got to, if you're hunting with them like regular hunting and, you know, as we do here, pheasants, and you want to be rather quick with your gun because if you're hold off a bit and you give them a chance, that would be... That'll be the end of it. But
we're going to take one more break.
That's right. And we're going to go back and talk to Dr. Hackett.
Dr. Maureen Hackett is still in studio with us. A little more talk about wolves when we come back on The Great Outdoors.
All right. The Great Outdoors with Dennis Anderson. Now back to Dennis and Jess Myers on 1500 ESPN.
I can make a living from walking in the woods. You can bet I'll be sitting pretty good high on a hill looking at a field downwind. If I can make a nickel off of turning in bass, never worry about the price of gas. I'll be wheeling and dealing and sitting there reeling a meal.
You know, one of my nightmares is
What's that?
So I'm in an accident, right, downtown Minneapolis, and I go to Hennepin County. And the,
HCMC?
Yeah.
And the
psychiatrist, because she's the only person there, and I obviously need help. Who's assigned to me is Dr.
Is
Marie
our friend, Dr.
The only
Marie
one
Nackett.
Who's available.
Fascinating
and my life,
by the
my
way.
Life is in the balance, and there she is.
Fascinating background. I read your bio, Dr. Hackett, Air Force veteran, and
yes.
And has done just about everything else under the sun. But one of your great passions, obviously, is protecting.
Yeah, tell
wolves.
Me this. Okay, tell me this. Those hateful signs, those billboards you guys put up when you first got going.
Those great billboards.
Well, you
save
said,
me, see me.
What
it, that's a good one.
Yeah. What
I
about the what about the one that said
stop DNR torture?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With
baiting and trapping and snaring are torture.
Torture.
Well,
okay,
torture.
But didn't you think? That was a little over the top.
It's not.
Okay. And you think that was a little over the top?
No. Actually, no? I didn't want to be wallpaper. How would I get anybody's attention about the wolf hunt if we were wallpaper? Mm-hmm. The worst thing in any kind of marketing is to be wallpaper. So we mm-hmm. weren't. We were. You heard about us.
But you don't do them anymore.
We'll do them if we have to.
But there's no wolf hunt.
There's a
now.
Thing called a marketing backlash as well. And I don't think that, you know, I don't want to dwell on this, but I don't think you made any friends outside of your core audience.
I gotta ask this about the billboards. You know, we saw them all over here in the Twin Cities. Was there a, did you do a push in Greater Minnesota, Duluth,
yes,
St. Cloud,
absolutely.
Other
absolutely.
Markets? I mean,
yes.
Obviously, the opinions yes. of the average Twin Cityan are different
yep.
than somebody in Roseau County, where I'm from.
And who gave you the money for that Center for Biodiversity?
Oh, no, we got individual donations.
No, not
yes,
at
we did.
First, you didn't. You couldn't have come up with that money right away at first. I was the only guy giving you any publicity.
Mm-hmm.
No individual donations.
It was not the Center for Biodiversity.
Okay. All right. Let's get on to the things you want to talk about. First of all, what can we agree? Can we agree there are 2,500 wolves in the state?
No, we really can't.
Okay. Pick a number.
We're not going to agree on numbers, but even if we... The whole problem with counting wolves is it doesn't tell you what their genetic diversity is. For example, if you knew the number of cheetah, you wouldn't know their genetic diversity either. And that's really important for the wolf.
Meaning
because,
males, females, pups, that
no,
kind of
like,
genetic
no,
diversity?
No, like
or?
Genetic diversity in terms of what wolf can survive parvovirus. Parvovirus will wipe out 80% to 90% of an entire population unless they're separated by a lot of distance. I mean, the only reason they live is because they're separated by a lot of distance if they live from parvo. And eventually they start to, it works its way through the population and whoever's,
okay, but
you know.
Obviously we have lots of wolves, and
but,
they're
but
surviving.
They have ticks.
Natural. Well, they're ticks. They're all kinds of mange, all kinds
right.
of things.
Right, and they don't, and they survive mange if they have a bigger pack, and they survive illnesses if they have a bigger pack, and they survive injuries if they have a bigger pack. So,
but they have a maximum pack size because
sure.
what do they do? When we're talking about this, they fight and kill each other.
Right, right. But you know, our average pack size supposedly is only 4. You know, we're talking 2 adults and 2 young
yeah.
wolves. We're not letting our wolves grow beyond 4 or 5 years of age. The average age of a wolf in the wild is like 4 or 5. And everybody says, well, that's because it's such a hard life. It's like, maybe it wouldn't be so hard if people weren't killing them. I mean, the main reason that wolves die is from human-caused killing. So let's go back to why no hunt if you could chop them down to 2,500 every year. The wolf is different than other animals, and you mentioned it in the beginning of this talk. First of all, the wolf has endured hatred and engendered hatred, and so when you have a hunt on a hated animal without working on the human attitudes, you have a lot of additive deaths. From other killing wolves, from killing wolves by other people, not legally, who think, well, if they're having a hunt, there must be a lot of wolves. We got to kill them.
Okay,
that's
but there's
thing.
A lot of disagreement about that in the biological
no,
world.
No, we've well,
I mean,
you
if,
know,
if
just,
every hunt contributed to additive mortality, then you would have that affecting deer and pheasants, and I mean, it doesn't.
But
obviously.
Deer and pheasants are not social don't. Pack animals with that kind of.
Coyotes the, are.
Well,
and we got lots of coyotes.
And when you hunt coyotes, you create disrupted packs and you have more problems. That you will find that the county of Marin County in California got rid of their wildlife services and went for Project Coyote, where they use non-lethal methods, and they've had far less problems with livestock problems because they leave the packs intact. The reason we don't hunt coyotes in the city of St. Louis Park or Edina is because we don't want to disrupt the packs where
that's
the male.
That's not why we don't hunt them there.
Where the male coyote...
We don't hunt them there so we don't shoot people by accident.
No, but it's also because we will create more coyotes. We will have younger,
okay.
hungrier...
All right, let's move on
pets.
To some things
okay.
we can agree.
All right, well, the other thing is you...
I do like wolves. I'm not... I'm just...
Let's go
talking.
To the main thing. The wolf. Look at what we did to the wolf for its entire... I mean, we wiped all the wolves out except for a few. And then now we have them in Minnesota. It's kind of like when I saw the stellar sea lion in Alaska in the icy strait. I could have said, oh, there are tons of stellar sea lion here. Well, the stellar sea lion is listed as threatened in Alaska and endangered in California.
Okay, so we did wipe them out, right, because of all the obvious reasons.
So
we did it by strychnine.
Let me ask you this. When was that? When was the low point for wolf population in Minnesota?
Probably.
Because, you know, I was a kid in 1978 when they became, you know, an endangered species.
74.
Okay.
Well, they were 70s. Lower than that.
So in my lifetime, the wolf has always been a factor in deer hunting and in, you know, rural Minnesota life.
It would have been a factor if you were here in the beginning of the country, because we have this primitive belief that we are in competition for the deer over, you know, over the wolf and other animals. Mm-hmm. And there's some level of that. But really, we have actually maximized our deer populations way beyond what they probably naturally would be, so that we have sport hunting.
I kill one deer a year if I'm really lucky.
But
now, the number is in dispute, but a wolf will kill between 19 and 30 deer.
Do you know how many deer we have, like, in Minnetonka? I mean, in Eden Prairie? And
but they're not eating there. But let's talk about that range. I mean, what? And we talked off the air, but what would be, I mean, right now, wolves, generally speaking, they're in the northern third of the state, let's just say that, agree on that. Generally speaking, where would you want their range? And actually, the court talked about this somewhat, and they said that the Fish and Wildlife Service didn't take into account that their old-time range
historic
and that they
range.
Weren't in the Dakotas, historic range, thank you. So where would you want them?
Wherever they can exist without running into trouble.
But they would, and Hugo or Mankato, they're going to run into trouble.
Well, that's right. And so they wouldn't be able to exist there. I'm sure we humans know how to kill wolves. That's really not the problem. We just don't know how to let them live. So I say, leave them alone, see where they can exist without running into trouble, and take care of the conflicts. Because really, this sounds bizarre, but I think we owe them a great debt. We have mistreated this species for so long. And let's go back to the very topic you talked about, CWD. You guys talk about CWD, and your one ally for CWD is the wolf, along with, what is your other ally for wetlands? The wolf. What is your ally for water? The wolf.
But the world is not the way it was when it was a natural place.
Right, but you have some natural areas
I'll go back
that you
to
can keep.
And I understand what you're saying, but if you're totally disregarding kind of modern wildlife management, which says you can manage for the population in perpetuity. Everybody agrees with that. We want wolves forever. We want a reasonable number of them. You pick the number.
They drop
the pumpkin. But in the meantime, if there is sport hunting, as an agree, and I'm not making that argument, but if there is sport hunting and you also have that population continuing, and the reason that can happen is because of the biology of things.
You hunters are not even out there with your traps, and that's hunting.
That's
you're baiting and you're not even out there. Right. Well, that's how
we're
going
to have to continue this another day, because the guy over here is waving his finger at us. And
the majority were killed with trapping, but they didn't shoot
them. I have one job here. I just get to wave my finger. That's all I do, and I do it well.
Maureen, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
You make a great argument. We'll have you back. So,
thank you.
It's interesting
stuff.
It's
amazing to have to talk this way, but I love it.
we
picked up on that.
We agree about on this show. It's great to have a spirited debate now and then, and you know, respectful disagreement and all of that. Dr. Maureen Hackett from Howling for Wolves. Quickly, your website. Where can people find
howlingforwolves.org.
All right.
I did fix the Wyoming part on the website. I apologize to everybody. Wyoming is not protected. The wolves are not protected federally.
All right, Dr. Hackett, thank you. Until next week, I'm Jess Myers. That's Dennis Anderson. This is The Great Outdoors, and go play outside is what I always say.
You know what they've decided on, though?
Flying 4x4s, black, out of smoke, out of love the outdoors. Pull that air on back and just let her sing. Yeah, 'cause it's all good, y'all. It's a hunting thing.